Jane and Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the
good evening and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. You, how's your week been?
It's been an interesting week.
Okay. Why has it been interesting? Do you want to share that with us?
No.
Okay, then. Well, straight on to the emails. Thank you very much for your emails. We are getting a few. Thank you for your feedback. We really appreciate it. Josie's been back in touch to say very nice things. So thank you very much, Josie. She's becoming a bit of a fan. Maybe we should make her a t-shirt.
Probably, yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. So thanks, Josie, our number one fan. The email that I thought was really interesting this week has come all the way from Quebec in Canada, which
wow.
is amazing. I know. And Richie has been listening from Quebec in Canada to our podcast and said some very nice things and enjoyed the Phantom Menace podcast episode very much, although he thought we were a little bit harsh on it. Anyway, he asks a really interesting question. And as I said last week, I've seen the question. Sam has not seen the question, so I have an answer already prepared, which isn't really very fair, and Sam always comes as a surprise to him. But this is Rich from Quebec's question, and he says, "Dear Dean and Sam, really like the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much." And then he talks about the Phantom Menace. And then his final question is, if you or Sam, because it's addressed to me, could play any lead character in any movie that you've watched, which lead character would you want to play?
Wow, that is an interesting question. And thanks for the feedback as well. We do appreciate it. I don't know. I think I'd have to say Spider-Man in any of the Spider-Man films we saw. But I think maybe the Andrew Garfield ones. I think that would be a fun attempt to try and do.
Interesting you said Andrew Garfield, because when you said Spider-Man, which is what I expected you would say, I thought you'd have to play the Andrew Garfield one. So yeah, okay, Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man. I got quite stuck on this. Well, not really, actually. I was torn between two things, and ironically, both played by the same actor. And I thought, would I want to be Han Solo, or would I want to be Indiana Jones? And yeah, because I like Harrison Ford, and I like the character. I like both those characters, but I've decided I'd want to be Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see you doing that role.
Yeah, just because it's awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah. So thanks for your question, Rich. So we have Sam, Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man, and I would be Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, and yeah, and I'm probably about the right age to do that now as well. So there you go. Yeah. Perfect. And you're probably about the right age to play Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man as well.
That's probably true, actually. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for your feedback. We really enjoy it. Keep it coming in. You can contact us via email at thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com. You had some feedback, though, from a different source this week. Is that right?
I did, yeah. I've had some feedback from a friend of mine, and it's around the Attack of the Clones episode that we did. I'm quite glad he got in touch because he's cleared up quite a few things that with the questions that we had, really. So I think it was me that brought this up about why Palpatine suddenly wants Padme dead by hiring Jango to kill her. I was wrong. And this was something that I did notice during the film, but I forgot. So I'm really glad it's been pointed out to me. It's not Palpatine that wants her dead.
Who is it?
It's Newt Gunray, because Padme humiliated him and his friends isn't the right word, but the rest of them in episode one. So he's just going along with wanting to kill it. And Palpatine is like, that's okay. I'm going to use that as part of my plan, but I'm going to assign Obi-Wan and Anakin to look after Padme so that he can manipulate them into falling in love.
Okay, that is good feedback, I think.
there's another bit of help as well that he's given us too, which is about the age difference between Padme and Anakin. And he thinks he's seen it somewhere, but it's more of a memory, I think, which says that it might be more believable for a queen for people to be voting for a queen that age as opposed to a 10-year-old queen. But he also thinks that it's somewhere George Lucas has made Anakin younger in that film. I wanted to explore how taking away a young kid from his mother affects him later on in life as well, which I think is a really good and interesting point.
It is an interesting point. And we did cover that a little bit in the podcast, not the age thing, but, you know, it is interesting that the downfall, part of Anakin's downfall, is that separation and death of his mother. So that is actually some pretty good feedback. If we make mistakes, we're only human, right? And so, yeah, absolutely delighted to hear that. So thank you very much.
I think for me as well, it's just the fact that I had those questions and now I have some answers. So that's very helpful.
It is always good to get answers to questions, isn't it? Especially Star Wars related questions.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, we don't need to worry about the deeper questions to life. We just need the answers to complicated plot points in Star Wars movies.
Yeah, it's a bit of a minefield.
Yeah, just tells our listeners who we are, really. So, getting back to this week's episode, we went away after last week's episode and we watched the 2006 Bryan Singer classic, Superman Returns. For the benefit of the listeners, we gave it a memory score last week. I gave it a memory score of 5, square down the middle. What did you give it?
I also gave it a memory score of 5, so we were both in the middle.
If you haven't listened to the previous episode, you definitely should, but my middle score was really based on the fact that I don't remember hating it, I don't remember particularly liking it, but I didn't actually really remember it. Sounded ominous, didn't it? So I always ask you the question first. Sam, do you think your score will change?
My score has changed, but it's another one of those ones where if I hear your opinion, it might change again. So I'm thinking of locking it in at where I am now, but we'll see.
Don't say what it is, but lock it in. I think 100. My score's changed as well. 100. I think my score has changed as well. But again, you know, like you, I'm a bit, I flip-flop depending on what you think.
Yeah.
So you say that your score has changed. Let's begin the conversation. Can you give me an idea of why your score might have changed?
Yeah, I think it's changed because, as always with these things, I think my memory serves completely different to my experience of it today. And I think, I mean, that helps for the podcast, absolutely. But I also think it helps in a way of I'm going in expecting something and coming out with something different to what I've expected. So I think it helps in that respect. Don't know if that answers the question, but yeah.
No, yeah, it does kind of. I'm going to kind of go in quite early and say I think the film flirts with greatness but doesn't quite achieve it.
I absolutely agree with that, yeah.
And I think that there are some really, really good things in it. So let me tell you the things that I think are really, really good in it. I've said it before, I'll say it again. John Williams' Superman theme is iconic. Properly iconic. I'd forgotten just how iconic it was.
It is. Funny enough, I was reading some reviews of this film and I saw one that said All Rise for the National Anthem in relation to the theme song, and I was like, yeah, pretty much.
I'd just forgotten. And although he didn't do the entire score for it, that at certain points in the movie that little theme carries it. I also have to say, I thought Kevin Spacey was really good as Lex Luthor.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, just the right amount of silliness. But then when he got scary, because it's Kevin Spacey, he does kind of aggressive scary very well. There's that bit where he shouts and it just sort of comes from nowhere. I thought that was great. So I thought I really enjoyed Kevin Spacey in the movie. I enjoyed the theme. It was great to revisit Superman. You know, if you were me, you remember watching it in 1978, and then to then revisit what is effectively the soft reboot, if you like, was great. But I've been talking for a long time, so we both agree that it's Flirting with Greatness. Why do you think that's the case?
I think for me, I found the story really disappointing. And I think the reason why I think that is because the script wasn't very good. There wasn't really a lot of substance to the script. And it felt like there should have been more dialogue than there actually was, especially as a point of keeping interest in the film. I feel like this never really came across to me in the Christopher Reeve film, but the Brandon Routh Superman sort of seems like he's got a bit of social anxiety, so doesn't really say a lot when he needs to, or if he does say it, it's really quiet. So I kind of struggled with that in a way. But that being said, that I don't know, I've just given Brandon Routh a bit of slack there, but I don't think it's his fault. I think it's the script, because I think he's a great Superman, a decent Clark Kent. So to me, I'm really happy with his portrayal and how he did it, but I think in a better story, a better script, it could have been perfect. And that is that's like a problem for a lot of films. I say that a lot, especially with Star Wars, but I just think it's a shame that he could have been so good, but he was let down by a script.
I think you're right. I think there's an issue with, if you think of the time that movie's coming out, long movies seem to be fashionable. I mean, maybe they're fashionable again now, but you had all the Lord of the Rings films, 3+ hours, King Kong, 3+ hours. There's all these really, really long involved movies. And I felt like with the script, they'd written a decent 90-minute, 2-hour script, and then just felt, and oh, we need more, we need to keep putting more in. And I found the first hour of the movie actually quite slow. There was bits of it where I thought, this is the whole scene with the aeroplane, great, really exciting. But there's the preamble before that that I felt like you just didn't need. And it took a long, long time to get to any bit that was interesting. So I agree with the script, but I think also the script is about pacing. I think the pace of the movie is painfully slow. I mean, it's over 2.5 hours long, and it just doesn't need to be.
I find it quite interesting because it's called Superman Returns, but it doesn't really feel like you returned. It's just, it seems like he's not there most of the time for the movie.
Yeah. I've found with Brandon Routh that there's the ongoing joke, isn't there, about how can anybody not notice that Clark Kent and Superman is actually the same person?
Yeah.
And of course, that's still true. But I think actually Brandon Routh got as close to pulling that off as anybody's ever done. He did look very slightly different as Clark Kent than he did as Superman.
I think I completely agree with that this time around, because I always find it a bit... I find the accidental Clark Kent is a bit of a clumsy guy, like cringy and a bit embarrassing. I think cheesy is probably a more accurate word. And I struggle with that sometimes. But I think in some cases it isn't pulled off very well, but Brandon Routh pulls it off quite well. I think I read in the trivia as well that he went to see Bryan Singer for a meeting in a cafe, and he tripped and spilt his coffee all over the table. And apparently at that moment, Bryan Singer was like, okay, this guy can pull off being clumsy and cheesy. But fair enough, that works.
Did he do it on purpose, do you think, that whole falling over clumsy thing, or was it an accident?
I hope so, because that's genius.
If we're talking about casting, there isn't really much more to say about the casting, because it doesn't have a massive cast. But I did think Lois Lane felt a bit young.
Right, yeah, okay.
Just an observation.
Yeah, I didn't really notice that, I suppose. But the problem that I've had with this movie, and it's not a problem with the casting and who they've chosen, but these aren't really my favourite iterations of these characters. So like Lois and Lex and Perry, they just don't feel the same to me as they have in other media. And I'm not trying to compare it to other things, because obviously this is a podcast about this specific movie. But to me, it was like, it just didn't quite reach what I'm used to with those characters. Sounds really negative.
No, a bit. But I agree that they are not the best iterations of it. But I agree that Brandon Routh's a good Superman. But I also agree that there are better ones. Where would you place him on the list of Supermans? I mean, where does he fit on your list?
This is interesting for me, and I don't know if you know much about the context behind this in modern times.
You calling me old?
No, I'm just... you don't watch everything. Brandon Routh is a good Superman. I'd rate him quite high. I'd rate him over a few controversial ones, I would say. But he's kind of been redeemed in the last few years.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen Legends of Tomorrow, the DC show.
I haven't, but I do know that he has reappeared as Superman in what's called the Arrowverse. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's the one. It's not. I don't think it's an episode of Legends of Tomorrow, but he is in that. But there's like a crossover that they do where they bring his version of Superman back, and they kind of give him the decent amount of screen time that he did deserve and the dialogue that I think he deserved. I mean, overall, it's a bit tragic what happened to all of those characters based on that crossover. But for me, Brandon Routh is definitely one of my favourite Supermen, especially because when I saw this film in the cinema, I had no idea about Superman. So this was my first experience with Superman, and therefore it's kind of like a special place in my heart, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Brandon Routh is interesting because it's the film is kind of the sequel that we didn't know that we wanted. It's a soft reboot of the original Superman, or at least the original 1970s ones. And this is, in real life, 15 years later. And in the movie life, 5 years later. And I think Brandon Routh gets a little bit stuck in trying to channel his kind of inner Christopher Reeve. He looks a bit like him. And I think the thing that you're saying about is lines and how sometimes the dialogue falls a bit flat is because Christopher Reeve was really good at deadpan, really, really good at sort of deadpan humor. And I think Brandon Routh is stuck with in trying to do that kind of thing. But given a bit more freedom, I think he might have actually developed into a really, really good Superman.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, actually. I think as well, as a character base, you kind of want these characters to evolve and grow themselves. So I think it does make a bit more sense that he is a bit more fluid and speaks a lot more. But yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really consider that. I just blamed it on the bad writing.
Well, I think it probably is. I mean, it isn't a great script, is it? And do you think there should, you know, like Spider-Man does a multiverse thing? Do you think the world is ready for a Superman multiverse?
The world might not be ready for it, but I am.
I definitely am. I mean,
I'll pitch it.
Zack Snyder's Superman and Dean Cain from the television program. Remember that? And then Brandon Routh coming back.
Yeah. Tom Welling from Smallville as well.
Tom Welling from Smallville, yeah. I mean, maybe we're ready for... We'll pitch this.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll get the Hollywood execs on the line. And
Somebody somewhere probably has already beaten us to it, but I think there's an idea in there.
It's funny you mentioned that. We have special guest, Zach's... <Just kidding>. Welcome to the pod.
Unfortunately, Zach couldn't be with us this evening.
And now a word from this week's sponsor. Welcome to a world where superheroes protect the city from evil, but even heroes need a little help sometimes. Introducing SuperSpecs, the glasses company that caters to the extraordinary. At SuperSpecs, we understand that even the mightiest heroes need clear vision and impeccable style. Our glasses are designed to enhance your superpowers while keeping you looking sharp. Whether you're a flying hero with laser vision or a super genius with a knack for gadgets, SuperSpecs has the perfect pair of glasses for you. Our lenses are crafted with the latest technology to provide crystal clear vision, even in the most intense battles. Step into our SuperSpecs store, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff will help you find the perfect fit. With a range of frames and lens options, you can customize your glasses to match your superhero persona. With SuperSpecs, you'll never miss a beat. Our glasses are designed to withstand the toughest challenges, ensuring that you can focus on saving the day without worrying about your eyewear. Join the League of Extraordinary Heroes who trust SuperSpecs for their eyewear needs. Because when it comes to protecting the city, every detail matters. Super Specs, where style meets superpowers. Hold on. I've just put some glasses on a picture of Superman, and he looks like that reporter. You know the one. What's his name again? Mark Trent.
There's always a bit in a film, though, where I always think, oh, why would you do that? Okay, and this is my, oh, why would you do that moment in the film? So it's almost at the beginning. He's back. Okay, he's walking around the family farm. There's a dog there. Okay, the dog's like, can we play with a ball? And he's like, okay then. And he picks the ball up. The dog's all expectant. And then he throws it about 500 miles. And the dog's like, why would you do that? And that's it. That's the whole scene. What is going on in that scene?
I don't know. It's a good point. That adds to something else that I like, though, is the there's really funny bits of humor in the movie. And that's like one of them. But there's Jimmy Olsen's got some great humor throughout, and I really enjoyed that. So as much as I say I hate the script, I want to say something positive as well. And I did think it had some funny moments.
I did quite like Jimmy Olsen. Again, you know, it's he was pretty good. Honestly, the only real bit of casting that I couldn't get behind was Lois Lane. I don't think it's the actress's fault. I just didn't think it was. She just didn't look old enough to have had, you know, a 5-year-old son and a relationship with whoever. Just didn't. Anyway, that's just my opinion on the casting. And the other bit, I'm going to cut right to the end of the movie here. This in my other kind of what were they doing there thing is, so Superman is in hospital, in a coma, dead or alive, believe it or not. And Lois goes in. Okay, she goes in with her son. It's all very touching and everything else. And then outside of the hospital is his mum. Why did she not go in? It's his mum.
I mean, I think it's because of his identity and his disguise. I think everyone knows that Lois Lane is the reporter who reports on Superman, whereas that's just an old lady who has no connection to Superman that the public knows. Sorry, that's not a fun answer again, but, you know...
No, it is probably the right answer, and I suspected that would be the case, but it just made me laugh. It's like, oh look, no, she's not allowed in. We have talked about the script. Let's talk a little bit about the plot. I did feel that the plot was a bit thin, didn't you?
Yeah, I think the problem that I had was that the plot revolved around what Lex Luthor was doing a bit more than anything to do with Superman.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Superman is effectively just reacting to what Lex is doing. He's not really the driving force behind the movie. Also, it's kind of an odd plot as well, right? What are you going to do? I'm going to grow a whole new country. Brilliant.
I feel like he's tried that before. Is that not what he did in the first Christopher Reeve film? I could be completely wrong about that. It's been a while since I've seen it.
I think he was trying to cause a giant earthquake in California to break California off and make it an island or something.
I don't remember. Yeah. There's something like that, yeah.
Somebody out there will remember and email us and tell us how wrong we were, but they're definitely something to do with creating an additional country or whatever. It's, I think there's a line that's the same, you know. There are a couple of lines, actually, that repeat from either movies, like little homage and whatever, and one of them is, you know, about prime real estate. But it did feel a bit... It just felt a bit... So Kevin Spacey discovers the Ice Palace. He discovers the crystals. He discovers the properties of the crystals. He fuses it with kryptonite to grow an entirely massive country that Superman can't get to. I guess that's fine. Whatever. But what's he going to do with it?
I know the end of the movie does feel, not like the end, but it feels a bit awkward where he's just sat there and everyone's playing cards and it's like, well, great, now you have to build something, like a house or a building, and it's just, okay.
Well, the other thing is, there's billions of people will die, he says. So who's going to come and live on your big new land then? You've just killed everybody off.
That's true as well, yeah.
One thing I did notice about the end of the movie, there are two things, actually. One is when Superman is under the influence of kryptonite and the thugs are, and Lex Luthor have beaten him up. That I felt that was actually, I don't want to say it was disturbing, because it wasn't, but it was very real, like visceral. You know, if you think a normal superhero movie, there'll be this big ridiculous fight, lots of explosions, people being punched through walls. It's actually unusual to see something that gives the perception of real, actual violence. So I thought that was really interesting. But I did find the kind of climax or ending of the movie quite dull. Nothing really happened. They kind of resolved the problem, and then Superman goes into a coma. Is he dead? No, he isn't. The end. And it just felt like, because the ending wasn't massive, that it just petered out rather than having a massive climax at the end. I don't know if you agree. What do you think about that?
I think I agree to some extent, because it doesn't feel maybe as big as it should be the way it ends. But at the same time, I think it's interesting the way it tells that part of the story, because you do expect something big to end. And in reality, everything sort of goes back to normal, and it's a bit calmer, and it's kind of like, now the danger's over, but eventually there'll be another big fight, but until then, nothing's really happening, life is just life. So I don't really know what I would change to make it feel like there is something that happens at the end, like a bit of a bigger ending. But I just think, especially because they pay homage to the way Superman flies past the Earth and sort of gives that little look to the camera, it just feels a bit normal. And I don't know if that really goes with what you're saying, but I don't know. I don't really know what I would compare it to otherwise.
Well, it might be kind of more recently, since this movie came out and you went through the whole Marvel and then I guess the DC Universe thing as well, the demand for the big ending, the big climax has got to the point now where if it doesn't end with a ridiculous set piece, then you might be disappointed. And maybe this movie, you're right, maybe it's just more serious, more sensible. You know, there is a big ending, but then life goes on and this is what happens after that. Maybe you're right. Did you know that Quentin Tarantino said that he felt this was one of the best superhero films of all time, and said that he thought Bryan Singer's direction was some of the best direction he'd ever seen? Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no. I know there was a lot of different films it almost was, but I hadn't seen that actually, no.
And Empire Movie Magazine, I'm going to go through some trivia now. Empire ranked it at number 496 on the 500 greatest of all time list. So just scraped into the top 500 movies. They described it as maybe a slighter return than some people had hoped for, but the vision of the Man of Steel, of Bryan Singer's vision of the Man of Steel, was an heroic effort. So 496. Going on with the typical question, how many Academy Awards was it nominated for?
Four.
It was nominated for one. Okay. Do you know what for?
Best Picture. That's probably a bit too high, isn't it?
It would be a bit of a... I don't know, maybe. I mean, it was for Best Visual Effects, but it didn't win. What was your view on the CGI?
I thought it was okay. Like, it wasn't anything special, but it also wasn't terrible. The problem that I do have with it, and I think this was a problem for that sort of those last few years of movies, especially superhero movies, was that when it wasn't a real actor playing Superman, he just looked like a rubber Superman. But I think that happens in a lot of movies, because I know there's a rubber Spider-Man out there somewhere. So it just doesn't look quite real, and you can tell. But apart from that, I did enjoy the CGI.
There was one bit at the end, like literally right at the end of the movie, and Superman is flying into space and past the sun, and something really odd happened with his face. I don't know if you even noticed it. Do you know the bit?
I think that might be one of the possibly one of the bits that I did notice, yeah.
And I just thought, oh, they haven't got it. Interesting, they hadn't quite got flying right either, had they, in 2006?
No. Which is weird, because in the 70s it worked like well enough.
It worked well enough in the 70s. It worked according to what they could do in the 70s, and I actually was surprised by how little progress had been made in flying. If you think about the CGI in the movie, you've got all of that stuff happening underwater, the crystal mountains growing and all of that. That all looks, that's perfectly believable in the context of the movie, but him flying didn't quite get that right. But I did like the bit with the bullet on the eye, though. That's good CGI.
That's good cinema, to be honest, yeah. I know that was an iconic shot of that, of those years as well. Like on the DVD menus and that kind of thing, and parodies as well.
Mm-hmm. It did, while we're on the awards trivia, it did win a couple of Saturn Awards, which are the Sci-Fi Movie Awards. It won Best Actor for Brandon Routh.
Okay, that's good.
Best Score, Best Screenplay, Best Director, Best Fantasy Film. So it won 5 Saturn Awards. So I think that's probably fair enough for this movie.
That's quite good. That's decent, yeah.
How bad of a mother is Lois Lane?
Oh, dreadful. Those were some bits that I noticed, especially like the scene where they introduce James Marsden's character as well, where it's just like, where is he? I thought he was with you. Like, what?
I'm late to pick him up for school. Okay, yeah, all right, fine, that can happen. On the day you win in a Pulitzer, that's fine. Whatever, that's cool, you know, you might be late. So what do you do on the way to the Pulitzer? I know, let's go to this address that I have where there could be big baddies happening. Oh, yeah, that's happening. Oh, there's a suspicious-looking boat there. I know, five-year-old son, let's go on the big boat, shall we? It's like, no, stop, he's a child, take him home. Give him to the babysitter, go and collect your big award. Stop putting your son in danger.
And it's the bit where our son is even like, oh, can I just stay in the car? No, yeah. I'm going to take you on this mass murderer's boat instead.
Yeah. And then that's, do you want to play the piano with the big mass murderer guy? Yes, you do that.
That's like... I can almost justify that scene, but it's the fact that she then just lets him get on with it and does her own thing without paying. The only attention she really pays is the guy still playing the piano? Not, is her son okay?
Just like, she may have won a Pulitzer, but she's not winning Mother of the Year, is she? Let's be honest.
No.
She has put her son in actual danger. Good news, though, good news about that is that it's okay because it's not actually Richard's son. It's Superman's son, and he's got superpowers when he needs them.
He'll be fine.
He'll be fine. He's fine. I knew all along the Superman was his dad. He'll be fine. That leads me on to something else I want to say about this movie, and I'm reminded of it because of the facts. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
And that is, when you watch movies from this era, how badly does technology date the movie?
It really does. It's quite bad. The interesting thing about the fax machine is that I'm still in the generation where I know what that is. So to another generation, they might not get it, and it really does age the film.
Yeah, and even the mobile phone technology. Okay, it's like you would assume they've got cutting-edge mobile phones, and they're all these kind of old, very, really old flip phones and everything else.
Yeah, I even noticed Jimmy's camera as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just, so they have what in the movie is, I think there should be a thing where if you're making a movie in a particular era, don't base any plot on the technology that's available at that time. So we always talk about box office. Now, it had a budget of $184.5 million, but ultimately it came in at $223 million. So it was a big budget. That's a lot of money for a movie, especially for 2006. And it was a box office disappointment because although it had an overall gross of $391 million, it didn't really make much money against its budget. And they do things like they factor in marketing cost, et cetera, and so it barely cut even. And so the plan had been, apparently, to go on and then make a series of these movies that they then silently backed out of because it had been... not quite a flop, but definitely not the massive blockbuster they were expecting it to be.
It's a shame, really, because I do think from that point they could have made quite an interesting series. And I would have been there to see it, to be honest.
Yeah, I definitely would watch another one. If there was a Superman Returns again, and there was something within that Superman universe, after that I'd think, okay, yeah, I want to watch that, because I think it had all of the potential in the world. And... So yeah, we said it flirted with greatness, or at least I said that. So, and I think it probably does.
I think to me it's one of those films where it does such a good portrayal of Superman and Clark Kent, even though some of those characters might not be my favourite iterations of them. I think it's one where it's close enough to the actual source material that I wouldn't mind seeing it continue. There's more recent ones where I'm happy that they've ended. Not saying that they were terrible and I hated them. Could get a lot of hate for saying that. But I think this is a... If I got to choose, I would definitely continue Brandon Routh's story in a sort of film sense. I know we kind of had it later on, but the bits in the middle, yeah.
Yeah, it was a sense that it was a missed opportunity. There was one thing as well I wanted to mention, which is not connected to what you've just said, but there's a bit where they're comparing photographs that somebody's taken of Superman. And the editor-in-chief, Perry, is it? Perry says, these two photographs were taken with a mobile phone or something. Clearly they weren't. because they're really good quality. But did you notice that the two pictures are actually very iconic images of previous iterations of Superman?
I didn't notice that, actually. I know there was a few where they tried to make it like match the comics and other references, but I didn't know that.
There's the picture of him holding up a car, and that's a reference, I think, to the 1950s Superman, the one that was on the television in the 1950s.
I think it comes from the original, the first issue with Superman in a comic, yeah.
That's correct. That's it. That's exactly. It's the front cover of the Superman number one, right? Him holding up the car.
Yeah, I did notice that one, and I did get a bit of a smile on my face when it came on, because as a kid, I didn't notice that at all. But as an adult, yeah.
That's a nice way into Sam's out-of-pocket take. Do you have an out-of-pocket take for us this week?
I do have one this week. Yeah, I've got a funny one as well after that, but yeah. So I found this one quite interesting, and it's another one of those mixed media ones where it answers the question somewhere else. But that's why I wanted to bring it up. So it says that it's revealed in the video game, the tie-in video game, that Krypton's discovery was actually a hoax devised by Lex Luthor to take Superman away from Earth, so that it meant Lex could be released from prison, because obviously he doesn't turn up in the court to testify, so he's a no-show. So it turns out, apparently, it was Lex's plan the whole time to get rid of him.
Wow. Okay, I really like that. It's a good plan. And it worked, right?
Exactly, yeah. My funny one is that they didn't have to use CGI when Brandon Routh flew. He can just do that.
Yeah, I've seen him in Chuck, and I've seen him fly three times in Chuck. So, I mean, I know that one's true. So we should reference the Chuck thing. Because we liked Chuck, didn't we? And I remember watching Chuck and thinking, oh, there's Superman. Did you think the same thing?
Yeah, that was interesting, because I still watch Chuck quite a lot. And I think it's quite funny watching it back after the whole Superman thing as well, because obviously, spoilers for Chuck, but he is a bit of a villain. But there's lines in it where Chuck's like, oh, why would you fall on me when you've got Superman over there? And it's quite funny that they throw those little nerd references around. But it's nice to see Brandon Routh actually get a chance to speak and also show a range, which is cool.
Superman has a son. We've mentioned this already, but it felt a bit soap opera to me.
Yeah.
And I felt bad for Richard, who seems like a perfectly lovely guy who can fly a plane.
Yeah, I don't know. I think what I feel bad about in that is Superman himself, because Lois Lane is always supposed to fall in love with Superman, and now there's this other guy involved. And how do you go... Say they did make more movies after that. How do you deal with that? So maybe it's a good thing that there weren't any more.
Probably. I do think at the end, though, I got the sense at the end that that she was gonna settle with Richard. And I think settle is the right word as well. I'll settle because, you know, this guy makes me happy and he's solid and everything else. But that was just an impression that I got. Did you notice how much Metropolis looks like New York if you just marginally change the skyline?
Yeah, I think that's always one of those things with the DC movies and shows that I find is that it's clearly trying to be a city that it isn't, whereas Marvel's just like, oh yeah, this is New York, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah, the nice little bit was when they said the city of Metropolis, a real city, Gotham, and then there was this little little CGI island that they put in the kind of sea around Manhattan. I saw that. It's like, oh, there we are. So we're not in Manhattan, because Manhattan doesn't have an island, or at least doesn't have a CGI island that you've popped in there. So then, is there anything else you want to say about Superman Returns?
No, I think I'm happy. I think I've said all I want to say, bar the conclusion, I think, yeah.
I gave my score... my rewatch score first last week, I believe. So I think it's your turn to go first with your rewatch score. So for the benefit of the listeners, you gave it a 5 from memory. And let's hear what your rewatch score is and why.
So as you say, 5 out of 10 memory score. And I think that was because I wanted to sit right in the middle. And this is one of those films where I've had a connection to it growing up. It was my first introduction to the character and these characters. But it's just, there's nothing really to the movie. And I feel like, as you said, it flirts with greatness. And I think that is the best way to describe it. I think my final points that I want to say is it does have a lot of great visuals, and I do think it's shot incredibly well. It's a bit devoid of colour in some scenes, which is a bit unfair for a Superman movie that should sort of be bright and colourful. But I did enjoy it to some extent. I like the Superman scenes. I like it when he's saving Metropolis and doing that kind of thing. But as I say, yeah, disappointing story, and the characters aren't my favourite. So my rewatch score has gone down to 4 out of 10, which isn't much of a leap. Like, it's not able to leap buildings in a single bound. But yeah, I think it's just below average for me. Like, I can enjoy it, but I'm not going to give it a high score.
Wow. Okay, that's very interesting. The flirting with greatness thing, everything you said I agree with. I think it's really, really nicely directed. There's some really good thought behind the direction, which you don't often nowadays get in the big budget superhero movies. I know it's Bryan Singer, who's become controversial, and I've never forgiven him for Bohemian Rhapsody, but I think he does a decent job. I think he does a decent job in this. I think the casting is fine. Kate Bosworth a little young. A colour palette of the movie, I agree with you. It's a little faded at times, but otherwise really, really good. And I do think, I think if it was 30 or 40 minutes shorter with a slightly better climax, I think there's a really, really good film in there. And I liked it more than you did. So I'm going up.
Oh, okay.
I'm going up. I think it's worth 7. I think it's worth 7 out of 10. I think it's a really good attempt at rebooting a franchise that didn't actually need to be rebooted, let's be honest. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Well done, Superman Returns.
That's great. Yeah, I feel bad now.
No, you always do that, but it is what it is. And what we always arrive at a kind of little compromise, don't we? Because you went down to 4. I gave it a 7, which is a total of 11, which means its aggregate or average benefit of hindsight rewatch score is 5.5. So it's pretty much where we thought it was, the 5.5. So, Sam, one-word review of Superman Returns.
It's going to sound like I'm going in the completely opposite direction to what I've really thought and said, but I'm going to go with the word enjoyable.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, it was enjoyable. I've struggled all day to think of it because I can't think of one word that would express what I want to say. So I'm just going to go with better because I want to say better than I remembered, but I can't do that. So better is my one-word review. Okay, so looking ahead to next week's podcast, had a brief discussion before we started recording, and Sam, would you like to tell the listeners what film we'll be doing next?
Yeah, so we're going to go to something that I've always loved as a child and growing up, and that is the 2005 Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, which of course is directed by Steve Box and Nick Park.
Yeah, I remember this one. I remember how excited you were about this as well, because you had seen the three animated shorts, which we will definitely be doing on this podcast. We will return to those. We know that we're doing this out of sequence, but just so you know, we wanted to go to the movie first, and you were properly excited about this. It was, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I could quite contain it. I had the curtains and everything, so I went to bed seeing it.
You did. When you found out there was another Wallace and Gromit outcome in the future, when you found that out as an adult, because that's quite new news, did you feel the same excitement?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because I've always grown up with it, so it's nice to get it back. I think it's a shame, obviously, about Peter Sallis.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But I'm interested to see it. I'll always be there to see it.
Yeah, so we did see this at the pictures. I do remember seeing it. I remember watching it. I think it's another one we saw more than once at the cinema.
Possibly, yeah. I don't know about more than once, but I do remember seeing it at least once.
Okay, and so
actually, that's
we're going to go
true.
With that.
I do remember seeing it more than once, yeah.
I think this is a multiple viewer, this one. I think we went and saw this two, three, four times at the movies and then wore the DVD out when it finally came out on DVD.
I've still got that DVD.
Oh, is that true? You still have the actual DVD?
Of course I do. I've got all of the original DVDs.
That's awesome.
I still
that might
watch
be the
them.
Coolest thing. That might be the coolest thing I've ever heard. So we're going to go with our memory score of Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go second. I think you can go first.
Okay, I have very fond memories of this film. And my fond memories of the movie are, you liked Wallace and Gromit, you were excited, I like Wallace and Gromit, I was excited, and there had been some build-up to this film, not least how long it took to make it. And I was not disappointed. So I'm going to go really high on my memory score for this movie.
Good, I'd be sad if you didn't.
And actually, I'm going to give it its first 10. So this is in the context of it being a Wallace and Gromit movie, it's my memory is that it's 10 out of 10.
I'm going to give it a 1. No, I'm joking, of course. I think for me, the last few movies that we've watched, I've ended up giving it either a low score or a score right in the middle. So I was quite looking forward to having a film that we could go into on a high note and hopefully come out on a high note. So I'm also going to go with a 10 for this, because I've just got really fond memories, and it's Wallace and Gromit. It's for any age, really.
And there might well be people out there screaming and pulling their hair out, but we're talking about a Wallace and Gromit movie. We're not talking about, you know, the world's greatest cinema, although it might be. It's a Wallace and Gromit movie, and it does exactly what it's supposed to do. I can't think of anything in my memory that would fault it. So it's our first ever benefit of hindsight memory score of 20, average 10 out of 10. The only way really is to go down. Let's see, though. Eh? Let's see. So you can join us next week to hear what we think about Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, our very first full-mark movie from memory. Will it stay that way? Don't forget you can email us at the Benefit of Hindsight podcast at gmail.com. And Sam, tell the listeners where they can find us on Twitter.
Yeah, we're the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, and that's at TBO Hindsight Pod. We're trying to get to 10 followers.
And do keep emailing us. We do enjoy getting your emails. And Sam's right, actually. Twitter probably hasn't quite exploded yet, but the emails do keep them coming. And thank you so much for listening and downloading our little podcast from our little corner of the world. We've had way more listeners and downloads than we could possibly have imagined. So thank you very much. And don't forget, if you've enjoyed it, pass it on to somebody else. So that's it for this week. We have given an overall memory score to Superman Returns of 5.5, which seems absolutely fair enough to me. So all that's left is for me to say it's good night from me.
And good night from me too.
Is it a bird?
Is it a plane?
No, it's the end of the podcast. Bye, everyone.
I thought you were going to say it's me sat under a blanket.
Hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?